This is Erica Wesley, the Executive Director of the Cultural Alliance of Fairfield County, welcoming you to the March 2024 episode of Spotlight on Arts and Culture, our monthly show broadcasted to you on WPKN 89.5 FM, bringing you news and information about the arts and culture sector across Fairfield County. Welcome to brighter days. We have made it to the other side of daylight savings and we are headed towards spring. It's also Women's History Month, so happy Women's History to the women in arts and culture who curate, cultivate, and create artistic opportunities across the county. In the vein of regeneration and creation, I thought today we can highlight an area of the county that has seeds of creativity budding and roots of arts and culture that run deep. Stamford, Connecticut is known for being an economic hub, but what many people may not know is that it's also a creative hub with tons of opportunities for artists. So today I'd like to welcome to our radio show and also to the studios of WPKN, Emily Durr, Christine Irvin, and Tanya Hope from the Stamford Arts Association. And they'll give us a window into the city of Stamford, the artistic landscape there, and also what their arts association has been up to recently. Thank you all for joining. Welcome.
We're so glad to be here. Thank you, Erica.
Thank you. So can we just have an introduction? Tell the people who you are and maybe give a little bit of your connection to the Stamford Arts Association. We'll start with Christine and just work our way down.
Thank you. I have been working with the Stamford Art Association for almost 30 years mm-hmm. and for over 20 years as the president / ED. And the organization was founded in 1971 by a group of 24 local artists who had studios in and around Stamford in New York, and they moved back and forth between being in gallery spaces in New York and trying to get a gallery space put together in Stamford so they could exhibit their work locally. So they bought an old townhouse, part of a five group of buildings that were owned by the church across the street, and a lot of sweat equity. I mean, there were wood, there wasn't even wooden floors in the basement. They created a gallery space, and we've been using that gallery space since, and this way people don't have to go and try and find new gallery space every time they wanted to have an exhibit. So that sort of model has kept us going, and I think partially because we own the building, we've been able to weather a lot of economic activity because we don't have to worry about rent increases and we have to fix the roof, but we own the building. We can do whatever we want with the building, which gives us a lot of leeway. We have, I myself have a varied background, and I would say that applies to many of the people, the artists that the other two women who are with me today, but our members as well and our exhibiting artists. I worked in Wall Street for a long time. I'm an entrepreneur. I've owned a photography business, and I started a fashion collection for women recovering from breast cancer. So I think we find this sort of trend with many, many of our artists that in that they are involved in so many different businesses, and they bring so much energy to what we do. We have about 12 exhibits at our Townhouse Gallery, which is a two-story building in downtown Stamford. We also curate the gallery space at the Ferguson Library. So between those two spaces, we probably have about 16 exhibits a year. So we have big exhibits where people, up to 40 or 45 artists, exhibit their work. And then we have small pop-ups. And we also invite people to use the space for solo or small group shows. So we really vary up our exhibit space. And then we do usually a 30-person exhibit at the Ferguson Library. And we work with them on topical issues such as what books are they reading, what programming are they doing for kids, Gay Pride Month, Black History Month. So we really try and work within the parameters of what they're trying to present. And we, at our gallery space, change up our exhibit titles every time. Our current exhibit is the members show. And our next exhibit will be Black, White, and Shades of Gray. Mm. So an interesting thing about the Art Association is that it is open to all artists, not just members of the association.
Oh.
And we do have special benefits for members, lower prices for being in the shows, ability to come to art critiques, run programs with us, and work with us on children's workshops. So we try to partner with other organizations in the city, such as Mill River Park, to run programming. For instance, we are running a 12-part free-to-all kids walk-in workshops this summer, starting next month. And we've done this for the past couple of years with Mill River. We were actually the first program that they had when they built their Whittingham Pavilion. So we've had a really nice partnership with them, as well as other organizations in the city, such as the Bartlett Arboretum.
Awesome. Well, that was a lot of very robust information. So thank you so much for that. Emily, introduce yourself.
Hi, thank you, Erica. I'm Emily Durr, and I started working with the Stamford Art Association back at the end of 2020. I was actually introduced by David Green from the Cultural Alliance. So it was a wonderful opportunity to, you know, connect the artists and cultural institutions to form the community and outreach partnerships. Mm. That's really what I do for SAA, you know, fostering and just getting the word out there about programs, exhibits, and hopefully introducing the gallery to budding art collectors.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Welcome.
Hi, Erica. My name is Tanya, as you know, and I joined the gallery in 2022 as a grant writer and an operations specialist, so primarily focusing on expanding programming and working around the challenges of maintaining and working inside of a historical building, such mm-hmm. as our primary gallery site. And I now serve as vice president of the gallery. And as a hobby, I am a photographer. And the wonderful people that I've met throughout my time at the gallery have pushed me to have my own website to kind of, you know, make my photography a bit more public and available to people. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
That's awesome. Well, yeah. Welcome. Thank you all. I'm excited because this is an all-woman conversation and it's Women's History Month. So we'll touch a little bit on that. But I am so excited to have all of you on the show. When I started the role a couple of months ago, I was so blessed to get an email from the Arts Association and you all invited me down to Stamford. And when you're new in a role like mine, it can be a little daunting because you realize you have to meet so many people, but you all were very welcoming. And so when I think of the Arts Association, I think one of the things that you all are doing very, very well is just welcoming people into your space. And it's not something that all art galleries or art associations have figured out how to do. And so I'm thinking about that as one, I think it's just your personalities. And I think that's really cool. I'm noticing just how welcoming you all were even in a new space. And I'm meeting Tanya for the first time and yet you have very good energy. So talk a little bit, and anyone can answer this first. How do you think about maybe using that as a value to go into community, to partner with people, like that idea of being welcoming? What are some of the ways and strategies that you're using to do the outreach that you do that then brings people into your space, not only physically, but creatively?
One thing we've really been good at is just the board is very good at, we have these brainstorming sessions at board meetings. Mm-hmm. And someone, you know, actually many people would have these nuggets and ideas about who to reach out to, and we always keep track of that, and then we go for it. We go contact the organization, and usually people are very, very willing to collaborate in some way. And one of our first things is inviting them to an exhibit, because you really don't know until you step into the Townhouse Gallery. Mm-hmm. Our exhibits are usually packed to the brim with artists and art appreciators alike. Mm-hmm. And people just like to stay and converse. And we see more new faces every year. And, of course, we have a longtime roster of members who continue to show up, exhibit, and support. So that's a wonderful thing to have in making a welcoming space.
Yeah, I love that. And I love that you all have that strategy of a brainstorming session. I think it's something that I'm going to adopt. Because thinking creatively in the brainstorming session, I'm sure that you all kind of, you're thinking of the environment, you're thinking of the people, you're thinking of the flavor. I attended the exhibit that you all had at the Ferguson Library, and I had so much fun. I didn't necessarily talk to every person, but the energy was very nice. The art was so just amazing, knockout art, you know, and I loved watching the artists take pride in their work. And you heard some people talking about their process, and they seemed very, very proud of what they were doing in collaboration with all of you. So how do you think about, in your organization and in your exhibits, gender inclusivity, but also, you know, inclusivity beyond that with other intersecting identities, you know, in your staffing, your programming, your exhibit selections? It all seems like you have kind of a pulse on that. So how do you go about thinking about it?
Well, one interesting thing is that 80% of our board is are women. Mm-hmm. And we have a mix of many people on the board. And it also, it sort of drives us to, I think, to back into what we really want to do is we want to make art accessible to everybody. Mm-hmm. And that's really our vision. And how we do that is we brainstorm, we reach out to our members and ask them what would they like, what are we doing wrong. And so we have a lot of dialogue mm-hmm. with our exhibitors and members. And I think, you know, we tend to really go across the board in what our exhibits are. And we're not gender specific. And we also were just taking, in anticipation of talking with you, looking at what sort of the makeup of our membership was, and it's about 70% women mm. of all ages. Mm. So, and we find what we're seeing is that we have emerging artists, and we have people who've been with us for years. So we have this great melange of exhibiting artists. And for instance, at the show that just opened, the members show, it was curated by our gallery manager, who is a pretty good example of somebody who is so talented. She's getting an MFA at the School for Visual Arts. She's teaching at elementary school, and she's our gallery manager, and she manages to do all this stuff. She was the curator, and her pick as the curator's pick turned out to be a person who it was her first time exhibiting. She was so thrilled, the artist, because she was, you know, like many people anticipating, oh, I don't know if this is good enough. But here, she gets picked by the curator on her first time out on the wall. Mm. So this is what we try to do, is really blend that art activity between emerging artists and established artists. And that's, I think, one of the reasons why we're so effective, is that we're open to anybody. And it's not just for... You come in, you get on the wall. We have a juror for every exhibit, so it's a high quality. Mm-hmm. And I think it raises the bar for people who are artists who want again. And we don't really look at any kind of gender-specific activity when we put work together.
Yeah, I love that you're touching on this concept of multi-generational art as a form of inclusivity, you know, because I think that I've worked in different spaces in the nonprofit industry. And this particular industry, I think, can think about that multi-generational approach the way that you all have. Like, how do we honor folks who have been in the industry creating for a very long time? But then how do we nurture someone that has a talent, right? And we want to see that talent grow. They have an interest, and we want to kind of foster that. So I love that you're thinking about it that way. And of course, I think the dividends show in the way that people kind of commune and gather in your space. But I'm also thinking about, best practices that people can take away from this conversation. So you're touching on some very good things. What trends are you seeing among the visual artists in Stanford? Is there anything that's sticking out to you? Anything that's maybe piquing your interest right now? Anyone can go with that question.
Well, since we offer a multimedium gallery, so we have sculptors coming in, you know, painters, people who do digital art, it's really interesting to see someone go outside of their comfort zone and say, this might be the first time that I'm trying this new medium. And we love that we can offer them the space to do that. But adding to what you said earlier, I love that you used the word welcoming, because that's actually how I often describe our space in our gallery, because art can be intimidating, especially for someone who's entering that space for the first time, mm-hmm. especially for someone who's very young. And we have had first-time exhibitors as young as 14. Mm. So for me personally, I love being that first place. Excuse me. I love being that first place for people to come in and exhibit art for the first time, and then be that milestone for them to pursue a professional career later.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the more that I travel into different communities and I tour into or in and out of different gallery spaces, I've also come to realize it's a confidence booster, right? Like, there's something very important that happens when one is selected to be a part of an exhibition. And it's so beautiful that you all are kind of giving someone a boost of confidence, particularly when they are maybe trying a new form or really just being brave enough to enter in and say, I want to be a part of this, and I'm not sure where it's going to go. And then, of course, I think people may find that confidence and they keep leveraging it, and maybe they'll have the desire to step into some other spaces. But I think that that's incredible. What are some other things that you all are seeing among visual artists and creatives in Stanford?
Well, sort of interesting. We were looking at the current show, our members show, mm-hmm. and we looked at the different variety of media that was represented, and it was all over the place, and you couldn't tell literally if it was who had created the work. It's so non-gender specific, mm-hmm. and that's what we're seeing more and more, that so many people are trying new things, and one of the things that we have realized for a long time is that people really want to get comments of other people on their work, negative or positive. Mm-hmm. So we, after the pandemic ended, we started an art critique program, and we do this every other month, and people bring in artwork, and we spend 10 to 15 minutes in a gentle review of their work. And I mean, sometimes we do things such as even turn the piece around, and it gives the person a lot of technical insight and just visual insight from other like artists who are either more or less experienced. So it's a really good opportunity for a young artist who's just starting out to get somebody who's a lot more involved and seasoned in the art world to talk about what they think could be done to enhance the artwork. So we find that kind of ability, a lot of it is so much communication, mm-hmm. of what can I do, how can I do it better, and sponsoring that kind of ability, you know, again, to feel confident about what you're doing and try new things.
Mm. I love that so much. And it's such an important way to refine your skill and refine your artistry, which I think is unique because I haven't heard of many other associations providing that particular technical support to an artist. So I love that you all do that. How do you go about fostering, and I think, Emily, this may be a good question for you, how do you go about fostering these connections with community partners? You know, what are some of the ways that you do that work?
We first, you know, invite them in the space, and we meet with them because it all begins when they see the space and they have a vision. Mm-hmm. You know, one of our event partners for our fundraiser for the exhibit, What Do You Love Most? We had a local winery come in, and we had a series of conversations with him, and he was a connection of Christine's. And it just, once they get in the space, they start talking to artists, and the energy flows at the event. We always want to do something that benefits our community partners too. We want them to be highlighted as well as, you know, gain new visitors to our organization. So when I'm establishing community partnerships for the Art Association, we always want to ask, you know, how can we help as well, get the word out about both of our organizations.
Nice. So making sure it's advantageous to both groups.
Yes.
That's good.
And, yeah, and also from a publicity standpoint too.
Very nice. What kinds of people do you see coming into the Arts Association? You know, artists, but then even just maybe people who are interested in art.
Yeah, it's interesting. A lot of people that are learning about us for the first time, they come in and they're amazed that a type of gallery like this exists, because I think most people that are non-artists, that are not looking for this or associate galleries with private entities just selling art, mm-hmm. when they learn about what we do and they hear about our events and our artists, they get really excited. And I think it's fair to say that all of them come back. So walk-ins generally come back later mm-hmm. to see, you know, future exhibitions. They attend our gallery events. So it's really fun and amazing for us to be a part of the community in that way, to like have people come together and meet the artist, because a big component of being an artist is your audience engagement, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, having a place where you can meet the community in person and have your art exhibiting for the first time, I mean, that's the best kind of experience you can get. You know, it's practice that every artist would need. So,
yeah. In addition to what Tanya just said, Stanford downtown is really undergoing a really incredible building binge of high rises that are multifunctional. So there are a lot of new people in Stanford, and I think this is like your target audience and ours as well, in that they don't know about us, but they're coming from, say, New York, and they're used to going to Chelsea and walking into a gallery. So here we offer that experience. And, you know, one of our goals is to do as much publicity so people can come to the our events and our galleries, openings, as well as workshops that we sponsor. So,
yeah, and that's so important. I mean, we were talking before we got on air about, you know, the intersection between arts and culture and economic development. You know, and I've been bringing into that conversation with other people, you know, housing development, infrastructure development, because people want to live in communities where there are things to do. Right. When we travel, most of us like to go to a place where you can go and enjoy something leisurely, generally something that has to do with entertainment and maybe something creative. And so I look at Stanford as a place where you have such unique energy there with the economic development, so many corporations and corporate people. And then you have this creative energy as well. And I agree with you. I think folks who are coming in and out of New York have such a unique opportunity to enter into your space, get a sense of what's hyperlocal, and get a sense of, you know, how people are creating from their own everyday life, but also the culture that's kind of budding within Stanford. And hopefully they keep coming back, they buy lots of art, and they tell their friends, you know, in New York to come to Stanford. That's the goal, I'm sure. So just to give a recap, this is Erica Wesley with the Cultural Alliance of Fairfield County, and you are listening to WPKN 89.5. And today I am speaking with a few women from the Stanford Arts Association, and you'll be hearing Emily Durr, Christine Irvin, and Tanya Hope. So when you think about curating an exhibit, what are some of the things that you're thinking about when you go first, hey, I have this idea, to you're opening the door and people are coming in? What are your thoughts? How are you going about that process? And how are you thinking about inclusivity specifically?
I think the first obvious piece of it is the visual impact. So you walk in the door, and this our gallery space is about 25 feet long and about 13 feet wide, and two floors of that. So you walk in and you're just surrounded by art on all the walls. You don't have to really go through different rooms. So you see everything pretty much. 80% of what you see is you walk in and it's there. So part of the curation process is to make that so visually interesting. And having hung a kabillion shows, I mean, it really is a skill in which you just follow the flow of either the content, the structure of what's in the piece, and the color, to make that move through the gallery space so that it's not jarring. So everything really, really, really works together. And part of that comes from the selection of what art is in the show, and then the hanger and curator who hang the show appropriately. So.
Yes, and also the emotional and connection to the theme. Like, selecting the themes is very important too, because we want a theme that artists can interpret and get excited about, you know, entering the exhibit. Because, you know, art that speaks to them and that connects with them, that they're proud to enter.
So you said you all do 16 exhibits on average a year?
Mm-hmm. Between the two gallery spaces, between the Ferguson and our...
that's a lot. Yep. That's a lot. Yep. So, you know, kudos to you all, because when I heard that, I'm like, okay, whoa, that is a big body of work. And so you're thinking about theme. Do you all approach this as like a season almost? So are you looking at the whole year and kind of casting or forecasting your themes, or are you working in increments?
Interesting question. We used to, at the fall of the previous year, we would put together a show schedule for the upcoming year. And with the pandemic, we obviously were, you know, like everybody else, sort of trying to figure out how to stay alive. Mm-hmm. And so what we decided to do was, instead of sort of casting in stone exhibits for the year, just do it on a 1-2 basis. So this way, if some new topic came up that was current, we can actually include that. And so we don't have to really work to a year schedule. And it's made it, I think, a lot easier to include like pop-up shows and open up the gallery to small groups of people or solo shows. And it's given, I think, our artists flexibility, and it's certainly given us flexibility too. We have a couple of shows that we do every year. The Marine Show, and this is a pretty wonderful exhibit of just, you know, fabulous landscape and water scenes. And we have been working with Sound Waters in Stanford, and to have their director of education and development has been our juror. And it's just really been great, because we've been working with him and vice versa, to work with our, creative spells of creating exhibits and showing exhibits. So the other shows that we have are the Faber-Baron Show, which is a color show, which is an international show, and it's usually always juried by a major museum person, curator from the Metropolitan Museum, the Whitney, Yale. So we sort of try and really sort of space up the exhibit pieces by having it big and international, and then more local, like with the Marine Show. So it gives us a little more opportunity to direct the exhibit topics to different types of artists.
That's very nice. I think that's a good approach. I like that you're thinking about and using the word flexibility, because art is such, it relates so much to our everyday life. And I think if we approach it with too much rigidity, we miss that part, and we miss that we're creating art in order to enjoy it. So it, I like that you're kind of thinking about working in segments. And also, I was just at the Met yesterday. Listen, we're stepping out of script here for a second. If you have not, this is even for our listeners, if you have not seen the Harlem Renaissance exhibit, please go. It blew my husband and I away. I mean, I could have literally been there all day. It's so wonderful, inspiring, and well curated. The segments of really Black history and the way that they thread you through the experience is just phenomenal. So when you mentioned the Met, all those good.
I'll just say ditto to that. It's extraordinary. Yeah. Extraordinary.
Yes. Thank you. So good. Okay, so you talked about your membership. How many members do you all have with the Art Association, and how do you nurture your membership? You know, are there any things that you do specifically for folks who are members of your Arts Association?
We have about 150 members, and we had mentioned earlier that we have an art critique that is specific to being a member. Mm-hmm. We also... we have an entry fee to get into our exhibits, and it's lowered for our members. And we also have other workshops that are member-directed, like iPhone photography, and we're working on putting together a painting in the, like a sketch workshop for our membership. So we're, you know, we're trying to do as much for our memberships to encourage our members to encourage, you know, their creative development.
Nice. That's a very good a good way to keep people engaged in their membership. Always, I think, offering them some of those workshops to help them be better. What do you do to maybe reach out to new audiences for membership, And I'm curious because we're a membership organization, so I'm always looking to learn from other people.
When visitors come into the gallery, whether they're a new exhibitor or walk-in, we have them not only sign the guest book, but Christine immediately welcomes them at the door and discusses the opportunities and takes them through the gallery. Casey, our gallery manager, is very welcoming to share information about, you know, how to get involved. So immediately we start contact with them by getting their information, adding them to the email list, and making sure that they attend our exhibits and get involved. And we like to keep contact with our members, as well as offering them opportunities during the exhibit to volunteer. There are many people that are very good with hanging that come to help us. We have them involved in the whole process. And another thing we do is survey our members, too. We like to do that once a year because we want to hear what programs they'd like to see more of and how can we serve them so that way they continue to become members.
Very nice. You know, I think for anyone out there who's listening and you're thinking about how best to engage your audience, that survey piece, giving people voice, is so important. We're conducting surveys right now, so this is a small plug to check your email and participate in the Cultural Alliance survey, because for that very reason, like just wanting to understand the membership and be able to respond, not out of assumption, but really one, out of relationship, and then two, out of sincere curiosity, because I think when people know, hey, someone is listening and their ideas are being taken seriously, they're more inclined to want to come in and volunteer and partner in a very, very healthy way. So in a few words, maybe more or less, how do you describe the art scene in Stamford? If you had to, some of our audience members, you know, they're not in Stamford every day. So how are you describing the art scene for people who know it and maybe don't?
So Stamford is a rapidly growing city, and there are plenty of wonderful places to go in Stamford. But funny enough, we are the only remaining community gallery in the heart of downtown Stamford. And we would love to see more community galleries, because this is about creating that momentum for artists to exhibit in multiple places, to also on the side of the audience, to have the residents have more places to go to see art. And because Stamford is also a family-oriented city, there's a need for children's programs. So we are very proud of our Art in a Park program, which is another collaboration with the Mill River Park Collaborative. And that is a free walk-in program inside the Winningham Center for anyone who's walking in the park with their children. And they come in and they do some art together. The children love it. The parents love it.
That's so nice.
We have definitely returning parents asking about what's next week's theme. So it was definitely a pilot program in the beginning that we were testing out, and it just became so popular and people wanted more. So we're really happy and like proud to offer this children's program that's kind of missing from the city as well. So having something that's free and walk in for the public, and also we serve the underserved communities as well as the park does. So that was an amazing partnership to have with them to expand our space to do that type of program and reach more of Stamford.
That's awesome. It sounds like you all are very responsive. It's another word that's coming to mind. That's good. How would you describe the art scene, Emily, in Stamford?
It has a lot of potential. There's a lot of activities going on, but people have to discover them, because not everyone, a lot of these new people coming in from New York have no way of knowing necessarily what's going on. They're getting involved in the community or getting integrated. And there's just a lot of potential there for them to become involved and watch the Stamford art scene grow.
Good. Responsive potential. I'm just summarizing.
And I think one of the things we have to thank you, the Cultural Alliance, and you particularly, is that you provide a lot of publicity for us outside of our local arena. And the Stamford Art Association was one of the founding members of the Cultural Alliance, and we have really benefited on so many levels throughout the years that we've used your services. And you create such an environment of allowing people to see what's going on in so many places. And also for us, we post all our call for artists, so we get people that are outside, new and outside of our community mm-hmm. to join our exhibits. And I guess part of, you know, our big push in Stanford is to be making the available art and cultural world available and known to people and finding that publicity. And it's a constant push. And we've found that using social media has really enhanced that capability. And so, you know, we will continue to work with other partners in the community as well to build those, in addition to the Mill River. As I said, we work with the Bartlett Arboretum on iPhone photography classes. So a lot of it, it's just being out there mm-hmm. and the partnerships that we have, fostering them and making them grow, as with you, the Cultural Alliance.
Yeah, well, thank you for that. You know, I think you all do an incredible job on your social media. And I don't just say that because you're here. You are promoting what you're doing, but you're also capturing the events in a way that I think the energy translates on social media. And that's very nice and very unique. And I remember the first time when we met each other, you all were saying, you know, we want more people to come. So I've definitely been trying to think of ways to keep highlighting what you're doing and to keep talking about it. Because, you know, Stanford, to me, it's a place that for some folks in northern Fairfield County, it may be a 30-minute drive down 95. It's worth the trip if you don't go all the time, because there are so many well thought out exhibits that you all have, and also interesting people. And we have hubs of creativity in Fairfield County, but I think even when you're in the art scene, it's good to break out of your natural kind of community and go see what someone else is doing, you know, and go meet other people. And that's how we can make the whole county rise in arts and culture, you know. So that's just an encouragement for folks who are listening and they may be thinking, I haven't been to Stanford in a while. Go. And when you go, check out the Stanford Arts Association. So who are some local artists that are on your radar right now where you're like, yes, they are creating and we're loving it and we're enjoying kind of showcasing their art?
Well, we have a list.
Okay, give me the list. Okay, give me the list. I'll take notes.
And we concentrated on women artists.
Yes,
because it's Women's History Month. And
okay.
I'll just go through. And this is not inclusive. So here we go. Nadia Martinez, Barbara Mathis, Maria Frisha, Fiona McCoya, Ellen Gordon, Joyce Anderson, Megan Orr, Barbara Summonson, Susan McHale, Eugenie Desario, Stephanie Hilton, Lina Rovas, Gigi Barrett, Susan Boyle, Vilden Starr, Patricia Petraza, Tracy Vizos, I always pronounce her, Tracy V, Tara Blackwell, and Remy Souza, Emily Teal, and Elena Kalkova. I mean, these are women that we, some of them are new, mm-hmm. and some of them are people that we've collectively been following for years. So this is a list from all three of us. And literally, you know, we've seen all these women create and develop their artistic skills, and we just, they're not static. They're all moving in new directions all the time, and that's why they're on this list.
Wow, that's awesome and incredibly thought out. So shout out to all of you for curating a list of artists. That is really cool. I mean, I'm thinking about how we, even for us as a Cultural Alliance, you know, we honor different segments of our membership, different segments. So this is part of why last month, you know, we specifically talked about Black History Month, because I thought it was important to hold space for the members within our membership who are coming in with, one, the notion of being Black, but then also creating Black art. It's a very specific thing. And when I thought about this show, women artists are contributing so much in a field where it's not always spotlighted to kind of pull the segment of folks apart and say, okay, we're going to just specifically be thinking about women artists. So if you had a 20-year vision for Stanford and the Stanford Arts Association and kind of thinking about women artists, maybe some of whom you've named, what would you want them to be experiencing? What would you want them to be enjoying as an artist in the 20-year version of Stanford?
So I personally would love to see more solo exhibitions. Mm. And as we've mentioned, you know, art can be intimidating. So even when you're submitting for a themed exhibition or any exhibition with a group, and it's your first time maybe engaging with your audience, you know, in person. So we're an in-person business, right? So a lot of people are more a digital presence. But when you're in person, it's a little different. And I would love to see more people take that second milestone from first time exhibiting to then solo exhibiting. Mm-hmm. And so far, the women that have, or just the people that have, I mean, it is a very emotional process for them. And as you've mentioned, curating is, you know, a task in itself. It's a learning curve for new people. But definitely solo exhibitions, I'd love to see more women doing that in the future.
I love that.
And also watching them grow and maybe expand where they are exhibiting. Mm. And also to give us recognition and bring in new people, publicizing that they got their start at Stanford Art Association. It's a wonderful thing to, you know, nurture an artist's career.
Mm-hmm.
And also have them, you know, maybe come back and mentor new artists that come through.
Yes, I love that. I love that so much.
And I think also we were talking earlier about Bridgeport having such a vibrant art scene and groups of studio space. And I would hope that going forward in Stanford that more of that happened there, that affordable spaces for artists to have their own studios and more galleries. I mean, we don't want to be the last one standing.
So, yeah, it's about a network, right? Yeah.
It's about
expanding
about
a network, keeping that momentum going, and just having more opportunities. So for us, we see it as a big like plus. If we had another community or multiple community galleries in Stanford, we'd love that.
Yeah, it really does set not only a tone within the city, because to your point, it gives people more opportunity to showcase the art, but it also sets a tone as a viewer where you can feel the art around you. And that's one of my visions for Fairfield County. You know, I hope that all of our major cities, I'll just start there. I hope all of our major cities can expand in a way that is inclusive and affordable. Because it really requires space that people can afford to showcase their art. Mm-hmm. I saw recently someone posting that they wanted to start an art gallery. And this is a person who, you know, is not associated with art in any way. And I thought, I need to come up with a workshop where, you know, maybe people who have these ideas and they say, I've spent a career doing something else, but I'm interested in this. You know, we can explain to them the process and also help highlight communities like Stanford where you all are saying, come join us, you know, and they can hopefully make that journey. I have one technical question I just thought of as we were talking. Do you have to be a resident of Stanford to become a member?
We're open to, I mean, that's why we have an international exhibit once a year.
Wonderful.
And you don't have to be a member to become an exhibitor in our shows either. So we are, you know, open to everybody. And also I should just mention that, you know, there's no fee to get into the gallery space. But yes, we welcome any artist. And a good point about our Art in the Park workshops is that you don't have to be a Stanford resident to join that either. So it really is just kids and their family making art. So we welcome everybody.
Back to that word, welcoming. That's
exactly.
really great. So are there any other things that we can anticipate? We're still fairly early in the year. So what else can we anticipate from you all for the rest of 2024?
So from the community side of the gallery, we are looking to expand our community workshops. And those are workshops that are at a secondary location through partnerships that are no cost and are walk-in. So with the success of our Art in the Park, we really want to run with that model and try to offer more opportunities for families and non-artists to have some fun and do some art. So casual workshops are definitely the way to go when you want to engage non-artists and just regular folks in art activities. Mm-hmm. But also our exhibitions, we definitely want to expand on certain themes and looking maybe to work with groups we haven't even thought of before that we can, you know, help them get into the art space. So we're really excited about expanding our actual exhibition groups as well.
Mm. Awesome.
And also our internship program that we offer for credit for college students that covers gallery management, marketing, public relations to kind of cultivate the next generation of, you know, arts management.
Mm-hmm. I am all about that. I cannot even express it or overstate it enough. One, I think workforce development in a place like Fairfield County is very important because statistically speaking, we know that really between the ages of 18 and 25, young people in our region are still struggling, you know, to get into some of those professional careers. And we mentioned already mentoring. I think that's so important. One of the things we're thinking about is the Cultural Alliance is having a fellowship specifically for arts administration, right? I don't want to be, you know, the youngest person to ever have this role. I would love to see more young people stepping into the space with courage and confidence, but also with some support. So as you all think about your internship, are you thinking about a UConn Stanford student, or are you thinking about, you know, kind of beyond the borders of Stanford, a young person applying?
It would be wonderful to have, you know, local involvement, local students. Mm-hmm. However, as long as they can come to our gallery to assist with the exhibit openings and the in-gallery experience. Mm-hmm. We, again, back to the word welcoming, we welcome students from a variety of different schools. Just someone that has the interest, they're ready to learn, they're ready to roll up their sleeves.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Very, very good. Well, I think that that sets a precedent, and I would love to see many more associations and councils and galleries thinking about the youth culture and bringing in young people for the advancement, not just of the organization, but really the advancement of that young person who may have some experience, but they're just not necessarily sure how to find their footing. Are there any last thoughts? We have a few minutes left. Are there any last thoughts that you have for our listeners and anything that you like to share about your organization specifically?
I'll start. I would just like to say that for anyone considering going into the art space, and side note, a lot of our artists actually have full-time jobs and something else. So that's always amazing to see, especially women balancing, you know, their busy schedules and going into art, you know, making the time for it. So if you're somebody that's considering that, we are the most welcoming place for that, and we will nurture you and help you grow and get your art out there for the public to see.
And also cultivating collectors, you know, people that want to start arts collections, but they might, again, be intimidated by a traditional gallery, or they might think that art is out of their reach and not accessible, to have them, you know, come in and begin collecting art.
Mm. Do you have any workshops on collecting art?
Actually, this is an interesting question because we, Emily and I, have been actually tossing this back and forth for a while. One of the things we're thinking about doing is having a how to hang a picture. I mean, everybody's intimidated. I don't want to put a nail in the wall. And we are just so used to putting, well, we don't have nails in the wall. We have a hanging system. But we know what works and what doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the things we're working on to develop as open to the public, too, because we know it's just a big, major issue. You buy some work and then what? Mm-hmm. So that's a goal for us this year.
Good. Yeah, definitely keep us posted on that. I'd like to attend that workshop. I think it'd be helpful. Are there any last thoughts that you have, Christine, on?
I guess overall I'd say it's just having worked with the organization for such a long time, I've seen the creativity among the artists grow. I've seen the amount of volunteerism we have and the amount of input and enthusiasm we get for the people we work with and the public. And we just want to keep that moving and make it happen more and more.
Wonderful. Well, I for sure, I'm really inspired by all of you and the work that you're doing and the creativity that you bring to how you go about giving people more arts access. When I first took this role, it was so important for me to begin to bring that concept into a lot of the conversations that I would have with people. One, because I've just spent my career on creating different access points for people, whether that's through education, you know, whether that's through civic engagement, grant making, and now through the arts. But we have a county where it's still difficult to access things like art. And some of that is because, to Emily's point, people are new to our community. I think post-pandemic, we're seeing a lot of New York residents, and now they're living here and they've purchased a home maybe, and they're thinking, okay, I'm here. How do I go about finding things to do or things that maybe I used to do? But then I also think a lot about people who've grown up here. And in some ways, art has felt exclusive, and it has felt, you know, like that thing that maybe you enjoyed as an individual, but it may have had some form of elitism attached to it. So I love the community partnership piece of what you all are doing. And I love this public art piece that comes through, you know, families and children, because creating welcoming environments begins with giving people a simple way to access you. And so I think you've all have given a lot for our listeners to hopefully consider and how they go about doing that. So where can folks find you besides Google?
Yeah, we have a website, StanfordArtAssociation.org, sorry. Mm-hmm. And it lists our exhibits, our gallery space, and what we're doing, and the board, and all about us.
So, okay.
Yep. And we are located at 39 Franklin Street in downtown Stamford.
Wonderful. So that is all good information for people to know. Thank you so much for joining. Happy Women's History Month to each one of you. And I hope that in your personal artistic journey, you are making good time to create, and you are also in collaboration with other people. I am Erica Wesley, and this conversation that we have had is the Spotlight on Arts and Culture. It is our monthly show on WPKN 89.5. And today you have been listening to the Stamford Arts Association, and we have had with us Emily Durr, Christine Irvin, and Tanya Hope. Thank you all so much for listening, and you can hear us next month on April 8th at noon for the next edition of the Spotlight on Arts and Culture. Thank you.
Support for WPKN comes from the American Institute of Architects, Connecticut. This nonprofit state organization with 1,200 members is comprised of architects, architectural designers, and people in the related fields. It also serves as a resource to the public. AIA Connecticut's mission is to be a voice of the architectural profession, while its vision is the built environment will be more humane, beautiful, and resilient. More information on services, events, and architect directory, resource links, and other items may be found at AIACT.org.
All I've got is a beat up chair, a mattress, a fork, another to spare, and that dusty old pile of records on my floor.
Heads up, vinyl lovers, WPKN's ever popular Music Mash is coming around once again. Mark your calendars for Saturday, March 23rd, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Reed's Art Space in downtown Bridgeport. It's a fun day of DJs spinning tunes, food, drink, music memorabilia, CDs, and especially vinyl records. The WPKN Music Mash is from 8 to 5 p.m. Saturday, March 23rd, with early bird admission from 8 to 9:30 at $15. Otherwise, it's just $5 for adults and $3 for children. Parking is free. Come on down to the WPKN Music Mash Saturday, March 23rd at Reed's Art Space in downtown Bridgeport.
In that dusty old pile of vinyl records I got sitting on my floor.
This Thursday, March 14th, come on down to Berlinetta Brewing in downtown Bridgeport as we take over the sound system from 5 to 9 p.m. for another edition of our monthly free vinyl nights. WPKN DJs will be spinning tunes while you can enjoy a fine craft brew and browse Berlinetta's carefully curated record collection. Free and open to all 21 years or older, Berlinetta is located at 90 Golden Hill Street in Bridgeport, across from the post office and just around the corner from the public transport system. So come join us for a night of vinyl records and craft beer this Thursday, March 14th, from 5 to 9 p.m. at Berlinetta Brewing. Yes. Look forward to seeing you there.
The Connecticut Audubon Society has been conserving our state's birds and their habitats through land management, advocacy, and education since 1898. Visit us at our centers in Fairfield, Milford, Pomfret, Old Lyme, and Sherman. We also maintain 20 sanctuaries across the state, open dawn to dusk year-round. Our eco-travel program is based in Essex, and our science and nature education program reaches thousands of school children a year. More information at ctaudubon.org.
Binnie Klein here, and I want to thank you on behalf of all my colleagues at WPKN for your generous contributions of your used cars or other vehicles. Did you know that the car donations from 300 WPKN listeners have helped us raise over $180,000 during the last 5 years? The condition of your vehicle doesn't matter, and it doesn't even have to be a car. We can accept boats, RVs, motorcycles, and even airplanes, even a used jetpack. Just go to our website at wpkn.org, click the support tab, the donate vehicles button, and fill out the online form. You can also just call 877-WPKN-CAR or 877-975-6227. In either case, an agent will guide you through the simple process of making the donation and will arrange to have your vehicle picked up from its current location. You will receive a tax deduction and the deep gratitude of the WPKN community. Thank you again to all of you who have donated vehicles over the years, and for your support of listener-supported community radio, WPKN in Bridgeport, 89.5 FM. Bye.